Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 94 of the Holtcast. I want to thank you for joining me. As always, I'm Jack Grimsey, and alongside me tonight is James Rushton.
Thank you very much, Jack, for having me on. Despite all the stress of having to go down and vote today. But yeah, it's all good, man. We've got some exciting things to talk about. And yeah, we've got a number of questions today. Probably one of the best days ever for questions. So yeah.
Yeah, certainly. Didn't look like it. And then we put out another tweet asking for questions, and you guys responded really well right before the episode. So excited to get to those. But first, the news that we've kind of been waiting to talk about. We haven't been on in a couple weeks, so I appreciate you coming back and listening to us. But Tony Shaw, now he has passed the fit and proper test, James, and everything's official.
Well, one thing's for sure, we know how to say his last name because the man himself said it, Shaw. Shaw, S-H-A-H. And yeah, he looks like a good guy. He's come in and he's under no illusions. He wants this year to go well. And he's certainly bankrolled it with the first signing pretty much instantly. Di Matteo's manager, Tony Shaw's in charge. And now we've got a new centre-back, Tommy Alfick. So it's all full steam ahead.
Exactly. And what do you think about all this? It's got to be just the best thing for the club that, and really in recent memory.
Well, yeah, as I've said multiple times, I mean, if a man passes the FA and the Football League's fit and proper persons test and he's bored, pass the director's test, there's nothing as we as fans can do. It's all in our hands. Let's sit back and enjoy the ride. It's going to be fun.
Unless you have more money than him, you know.
You want to buy him out. But even then, he has to put the club up for sale, doesn't he? I don't think aggressive takeovers work that much in football, especially if it's someone's property like it was Randy Lerner's and like it is now Tony Shaw's. But yeah. It looks good, it feels good, and all the uneasiness has drained from me. I feel good that it's passed the test, there's nothing we can do, you know, it's all good to go.
Yeah, I was more relieved about the manager appointment, Roberto Di Matteo. One of the names when the manager search kind of began, wasn't one of the bookies' favorites, but I think he's probably one of the three best we could get. I think Moyes was everyone's number one.
Yeah.
And you don't always get your number one choice, but I think it's a really good appointment. And most importantly, it wasn't Nigel Pearson.
No, of course not. I mean, Di Matteo came out of nowhere, really. That one day, his odds exploded, and then all of a sudden, he's here. It's really incredible. It's how it turned around. I think we were all set for Pearson, all set for Moyes, and it all turned around, and Di Matteo's in charge. I don't think we all expected the magnitude of this takeover, as well as the impressive level of manager we've now got, which is really cool.
Yeah, manager that's won a European Cup.
You don't win it by accident, do you?
No, even if you're Peter Whyth and it hits your shin.
You're listening to The Holtcast with Jack Grimsey and Robert Lintott.
It looked like Di Matteo was Tony Shaw's guy
from the beginning of time, as far as I can tell.
You could scrub 2016 off the calendar and just put 1 AT after Tony, like.
Yeah, straight done. Villa. I will go ahead and answer one of our Twitter questions early because it does link in very well. Villa really have control or deleted this season. It's gone. They've started fresh. There's pretty much zero focus on what happened last year. They're starting really fresh, and it looks as almost like we've reset everything, and all these players that we wanted to get rid of are here as depth options now, which is crazy. We thought we was going to, you know, set for a summer outload where we'd lose loads of players, but it doesn't look like anyone's come in for anyone yet, which is A, disappointing in some cases, and B, good for others.
Yeah, and you'd certainly want to rid Lescott and Richards, but if you think about it, maybe they'll be good enough in the championship, especially if they're not first choice. They can only mess up so much if they're on the bench all the time.
Well, but if you think about it, it's an unprecedented level of depth for Aston Villa if they don't sell anyone. I mean, when have we ever had a season where we've got two right-backs you could start, or four or five centre-backs, or three left-backs? We've never had that. We've always had, like, one or two. for as long as I can remember, and that's always been our downfall, that we've never had enough options, and now we do, despite them those options being bad. But I'd rather those options be terrible than have no options at all and have to be forced to play.
Yeah, there's another drop off in quality from maybe one of your stars in the team to someone in the academy, because like you're saying, there is depth. And you know, that's, I think that's really important, especially if Villa do go up, because look at the sides who've come of Watford, especially, I think, obviously Leicester, but Bournemouth as well, where Tommy Elphick is from. You know, they replaced some players, but they made smart purchases within their means and haven't gone bust. And they're able to gradually change the squad, you know, a couple pieces every year.
Yeah, hopefully Aston Villa can emulate those teams and build on with lots of depth. I mean, of course you want... You know, so
and even Norwich, I think that was a big downfall for Norwich.
And no depth, teams fail when a major player gets injured and you can't have a next man up and you can't replace them. So yeah, depth is so important for Aston Villa, and even if those options are Julian Lescott or Micah Richards, if they're substitute options, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, and you know, if we ended up being stuck having to keep them, but that meant that we would keep Jordan Amavi and Jordan Ayew and Ghana or something like that. I mean, yeah, we're obviously not keeping all them, but like, if so, then that's okay.
Of course, yeah. It's all looking quite rosy for us Villa fans right now.
I know, yeah. People are like, how are you dealing with relegation? I was like, well, you know,
what relegation?
I accepted it in November, and now we're going to try to go up.
Yeah, it's so glad it's over and done with.
Yeah, you know, like some people... I get questions from people sometimes that's like, is 7,500 still going to be around? I was like, what the fuck? Like, excuse me?
Relegation is far from the end for Aston Villa. And this is one of the
I was like,
days,
you know, there's a Bolton blog at SB Nation, and that house has been eliminated. That's a former great house. You know, it's dead now. I hope it's not a spoiler for you, but you know... I spoiled it for my mom right after the episode, so I kind of felt bad, but...
Oh, God.
I have people now every week unfollowing me on Twitter, and the kid next to me at work unfollowed me on Snapchat for having spoilers of Game of Thrones.
But yeah, House Bolton have been relegated to, League One now, and things are bad for Aston Villa. Things were bad for Aston Villa, but there are so many other teams which are in far... dire circumstances.
About Wigan. Wigan would get zero fans. They did a double dip, and they've come back up. They're in the Championship now after winning League One.
Yeah, hardly one of the most fashionable teams. And
of course, they were massively unlucky to go twice in a row. But
yeah,
you know, if you have depth, like you were just saying, James, it makes it much, much harder.
Yeah,
you know, it eliminates chance to a degree.
Yeah, depth is so important. It's so good. Even if the players are bad, you need them there for, you know, you can't...
You know, a bad right back is much better than playing decent left back at right back.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you get your starters and then those depth options, you can't go wrong, because Villa had Alan Hutton or Michael Richards to choose from last year. They didn't have someone they could... And, you know, Mark Richards didn't even want to play right back, so they didn't even have one person.
Say that like you think he wanted to play centre back.
Michael Richards wanted to play centre back.
He didn't want to defend. He wanted to...
he should be...
He wanted to play the Matuidi water-carrying midfield role and run all over the pitch.
I think that'd actually be a pretty good role for him, because he doesn't like to stay back in position, does he? He likes to win.
He would, like, run into someone and get hurt within... I don't know. There's a lot of people in the middle of midfield sometimes.
That Tim Sherwood would make someone like Kyle Walker play as a winger, you know, because it suited his, you know, pace and skill set. But he wouldn't make Michael Richards a midfielder. He'd just stick him in centre back. The player who wanders from the ball so much, the player who runs up, like, does these surging runs. And you're like, hang on.
I feel like Spurs had just sold Bale for truckloads of cash and thought they'd crack the code and they were going to turn another defender into a winger.
Yeah, just not.
Yeah, I don't know how much Sherwood. That's a pretty big knock against Sherwood if that was his idea.
Awful.
And imagine if we would have rehired Sherwood as some people wanted to. Obviously, there was no way back for him, and you just can't do that because you'd be a very incompetent organization. But that's not the point. Like, if if you wanted Sherwood back, that I think that really says something.
Yeah, Tim Sherwood wasn't a great football manager.
Let's just forget about that time. He was a nice guy, cool.
Yeah.
He was fun.
Yeah, take it away. We can't talk about Tim Sherwood.
He was always entertaining, you know.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with him as a man. I hope he does well, but
a man with the least impact on the football club, who we talk about the most.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some great days under him, but God.
God, that FA Cup was depressing.
So you could get consigned to memory forever now.
Yeah. One player who we saw far too much of under Tim Sherwood, Kieran Richardson, he's now left the club as well as a host of others, including Charles Nzogbia and, unfortunately, in my opinion, Luis Kinsella, who never really got a chance under either Tim Sherwood or Remy Gard, or even worse,
Josh
Eric
Webb
Black.
On as well. Genoa, Donasian, gone. Lots of players who never got a chance. I mean, Benji Seagrest was out on loan at Solihull Moors and Wickham last year. And considering Aston Villa aren't really secure goalkeeping wise, I mean, we've got Brad Guzan. Who seems
at least get him on the bench.
A bit of form in the Copa America-ish. But, I mean, yeah, to sack all these players off, it's good. I mean, there were some wasters there, Richardson and Nzogbia mainly. But, you know, Villa have got a history of getting rid of these youth players that then go on to achieve instead of creating this cohesive unit. And then, you know, it does annoy me when these players...
That's the thing with a goalkeeper, though, is they're not going to develop for so long. Yeah. And if you're going to sign someone good, okay, but we don't have anyone good at the moment, so yeah.
Well, you always keep free goalkeepers, don't you? You have the bench option, the depth option, and the starter. So why can't Aston Villa keep these academy products as that third option? I mean, Benji...
Yeah, on $6,000 a week, you know?
Yeah, it's not going to harm them. I mean, he's never going to play, but it's good. It's good, and now you've got Jed Steer and Brad Guzan and Mark Bunn. So, yeah, there does need to be improvement there. So that's Villa's released players. Nothing special. Just glad to see the back of Richardson and Nzogbia. Two absolute passengers, mainly Nzogbia. Don't really have much against Richardson. He didn't really do much or was that bad. But, yeah.
I was just annoyed that we signed him for 2 years when we signed him.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
He was free and he scored, like, early in his career, but whatever. He's dull.
Yeah, so yeah, that's Villa's released players. What have we got next?
Yeah, I was just going to say, meanwhile, Lovre Kalinic is the third choice goalie for Croatia at Euro 2016.
An impressive Croatia team, among others, at Euro 2016, including our big guy on the blog, editor Ellis Sanford, supporting the Welsh team, who have smashed all expectations, to be fair.
Won the group, huh?
Yeah, won the group and... You know, the Welsh team have done so well, but I really do think, hang on, you got a team with one of the best players in the world here. How can everyone sleep on you? Same with Iceland, you know.
You've got a team where the rest of them, they're just a great unit, and unlike Sweden, they play as a team and they're not
one man.
You know, their Bale's maybe not as intimidating as Ibrahimovic for obvious reasons, but.
But yeah, I mean,
Zlatan was burned out. He scored 50 goals in 51 games last season, and then he's played a lot of minutes. He's old.
It's almost like people act like these teams are bad, and then they do good, and they're so surprised. And it's like, I don't know how you can be.
They had a great qualifying campaign. Why are you surprised? Yeah, international football is weird.
I get it when the people from Wales are surprised because, you know, they have underachieved, but they've been. I remember 10 or 15 years, we just had them every qualifying campaign and swept them away, even with Ryan Giggs, you know, Craig Bellamy, with all these good players. We just swept them under the rug. We battered them. I understand Welsh people, you know, being surprised at this achievement, but I wouldn't go as far to say, oh my God, this is crazy. They did well, and it was a shame that England beat them. It was very, very unfortunate. Very came down to, you know, a last-minute goal, which this Euros has been famous for. But there's these teams, you know, tight teams with great players, you know, Hungary, Iceland, Wales among them, that, you know, are through. Northern Ireland are the real overachievers here. Crazy.
Yeah. You said they have 40 professional players?
Yeah, one of the weird things is that I get why Iceland are assumed to be the smallest nation, but they're a well-trained squad here. They've got 70 people.
They beat the Netherlands home and away.
Yeah, they're a well-trained bunch of guys. Northern Ireland, it's hard. The way the Irish FA works is you can choose players from either side of you know, the Irish nation. So each FA can pick and choose, and most players do declare for the Republic because it's, you know, it's got more prestige on an international level.
If you want to actually qualify for the Euros.
But Northern Ireland only have 40 people to choose from, you know, at a professional level. So it's very hard to put a side together. You know, you're forced into, it's like Aston Villa, haven't got much depth, and, you know, you have to beg, borrow and steal, and they've really have achieved. I mean, not getting beat 7-1 by Germany puts them so high in, you know, the standards of, you know, world football now. It's crazy, especially when a team like Scotland can't qualify, you know, and Northern Ireland are there completely overachieving. That's why I can't really say Wales are overachieving, because if you look at Northern Ireland, daily underdogs against Wales now, and Wales have smashed it. So Euro 2016 has been absolutely amazing so far, and people didn't really seem to enjoy the first stages, you know, the first few games, but it's been a real surprise and a real bag of tricks.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why you like, I was watching games for 6 hours a day at work. It was amazing, even if it was,
I mean,
a victory. About what, the first six games all were either, there was one draw and the rest were just victories by a single goal. I don't know. There's a lot of, as much as you can't use tactics at a national team level, there are some good managers there.
Yeah, and I mean, it's
top professionals, obviously, you know.
I mean, on the other hand, you've got the Copa America, where I think every team that was expected to kind of do well has done well, except Brazil. I mean, there's the outlier there. But
Brazil totally chucked it, and Mexico got battered by Chile when Mexico was looking like one of the better teams at the tournament.
Yeah, but they got beat by Chile, who I think you'd expect to do well. They've got a very good team. But
you would, but a lot of people here in the U.S. Were not really realizing that Chile is the fifth-ranked nation in the world, and last night they played Colombia, who was third. And, you know,
it's insane, isn't it?
I don't think too many people really knew that, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's good. The FIFA rankings. Argentina is one, and Germany's two, but they lost to Germany, I think. I think you're number one until you lose.
Where one person's top until another team beats them and they go top. That'd be a lot.
Exactly. At least if Germany don't win the Euros, then you can recrown Spain if they win it, or you could give it to Argentina when they win the Copa, if they win the Copa.
Yeah, and I think
they'll play Chile.
Don't want to ruin the structure here, but we've got a question. Since we're on the subject of Euro 2016, does one good performance, Jack, at Euro 2016 make a good player? I think the answer is obviously no.
I mean, I think it depends on who the scout is.
I mean, if you're the Northern Ireland keeper, Mick McGovern, then yeah. I mean, these Premier League clubs are looking at this player, you know, couldn't get much games at Rangers. So, yeah.
I know of one keeper who's overperformed that could go to Villa, probably for cheap, and he'd probably even bring his own pants.
On Gabor Kirai. Keeper. I remember Gabor.
Was before my time at Villa.
I will write something about this one day, how this man has now become this great man, this eccentric goalkeeper, this, you know, relic of hashtag against modern football, this relic of 2000s football that has somehow found his way into the limelight at Euro 2016. And it's so sad that he's become this BuzzFeedy kind of joke. He's
just called
Sweatpants Keeper.
Yeah.
He's such a good guy. He's like a really eccentric, crazy guy. And people are just ripping the piss out of him. But yeah, I love this guy. Gabor Kirai used to play for Villa. He's a bad goalkeeper. But
Yeah, exactly. That's what's hilarious, that he's been having a good tournament.
Yeah, he is notorious. But yeah,
Villa had him on loan for, a month?
Yeah,
it's like send him back to Palace,
and he's one of the most memorable goalkeepers that I can ever remember in my time supporting.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, it's so sad that he's just become hashtag content for everyone. It's just it just makes my heart swell, because I do remember a time when Gabor wore that Hummel kit for Aston Villa, and it was great. No, I can't believe he's still alive, to be honest.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing.
Yeah, still around at age 40, but yeah, I mean, I guess we'll stay on the international tournaments a little bit before we get to Twitter questions. So, what, you know, the Euro format, it's only narrowed it down to 16 teams out of the 24 for the knockout stages, and it was being dubbed as easier to qualify than not to, which obviously that's a lie, but
yeah, of course. I mean,
you know, it's interesting when you see teams like Netherlands didn't even make it to the finals.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, I mean, obviously Iceland beat them, but they're in, and, you know, a team like Croatia almost looks like they could be the favorite. They've been playing the best ball, probably.
Yeah, I'm playing amazingly. Croatia, everyone says dark horses, which I think is a bit weird. And considering I'd consider someone like Wales a dark horse, like a real underdog. Croatia, they've been quality for some time. You know, I think they always had a shot of doing well in this tournament. Croatia have got a real shot of this.
Yeah, they have an old squad, but it's also a very experienced squad. They know how to play with each other, and they know what works.
Exactly. And another player, I think, moving over to the North American continent, he's done well. Would you say Carlos Sanchez has done well? Not sure he has-ish. He's done okay.
Yeah, I don't know. He had a really good Copa last year.
Yeah, I mean...
But he got sent off last night.
Every year?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, that's crazy.
No, it's not. It's every two.
Oh, man, that's still... Every two.
They just did it. They just did another one this year so they could make a lot of money.
Oh, that's a bit weird.
But I'll have something about that somewhere, not 7,500, that you can read soon.
Of course, yeah. Jack's been doing super well with some further analysis on various other websites, you know, about what's been happening at the Copa America. He's been there in person to a load of games.
Yeah, the four games at Chicago was great. Yeah,
Chicago Soldier Field, where I believe the pitch has been ripped up into some kind of swamp-ish kind of thing now. And there was
it drowned last night. It was ridiculous. And Colombia were attacking the end that was totally waterlogged.
Oh, God.
Sometimes the ball would just come to a dead stop on a puddle and going the other way. And the referee was making some interesting decisions.
So how did you fall into the arms of Villa's Afro'd hero, our own Colombian Carlos Sanchez, then?
Yeah. So I went down to the mix zone after the match, and
he was just
standing there for about half an hour waiting and wondering why I even went down, because so far all the Spanish-speaking teams that have played at Copa in Chicago haven't done one word of English in their answers, like not at the press conference. They have translator headsets that you can put on.
Yeah, it'd be pretty difficult.
That probably wouldn't be good to record, and the organization has been reluctant to provide additional material. But I was waiting down there, and Colombia was walking by, and just finally at the end of the Colombian chain of players, Carlos Sanchez had been talking to what I assume was Colombian media, or at least other Spanish-speaking media from the area. After the match, he got a red card he picked up a yellow in the 41st and then a second yellow in the 57th minute. And it's only 16 minutes in time, but it was like 3 hours apart because of a 2.5 hour rain delay. But... yeah, so he got sent off. He was talking to Spanish media. He came down the line, and I asked him about Villa and his future there. So we're actually going to have the interview audio in here for you. It's very short. It's about 40 seconds. He didn't really have a lot of time. He was on his way to the bus after being at the stadium 3 hours later than anyone planned due to the weather.
Yeah, expected to be in a hurry.
It was crazy. We got out of there at like 1.
But how amazing is it that, you know, we don't even have to tell you what Carlos Sanchez said about Villa. You can actually hear it, and Jack went out and got that for you after waiting so long at a Copa America match delayed because of weather. But Carlos Sanchez was there, so Jack got to speak to him.
Yeah, I didn't ask him about the red card. I didn't really feel like...
of course not. But yeah, you got the scoop, man.
He just seemed like a nice guy. Was still kind of smiling, you know. And I mean, obviously, he's a huge dude. He's thick, he's built, but like, you know, I don't know why people he could play center back in the championship next year.
Why not? But yeah, man, I think that's a good time to lead into your audio of you speaking to our own Carlos Sanchez. So here's Jack interviewing Carlos Sanchez.
Carlos, do you think you're staying at Aston Villa this summer?
After the Copa America, I will go to Aston Villa because it's my team. I have 2 years contract with us, so I need to be back.
Are you excited for with the new ownership and new manager coming in? You think it's a new chance for you?
Yeah, because it's a new start, so I'm very excited.
Okay, thanks, Carlos.
Yeah, so I hope you all enjoyed my interview with Carlos Sanchez. You probably saw the text of that on 7500 yesterday on Thursday. But Colombia, they'll be facing the United States on Saturday in the third place game at Copa America, and Sanchez will be suspended from that game after picking up the yellow. Looked like he may have faced Brad Guzan, but Guzan's played every game so far, and it'll probably be Tim Howard.
Poor Brad. I think he's done all right. He hasn't done too terribly. I mean, he got battered.
He got cooked the third minute against Argentina. He was caught in no man's land. It was better or worse than when he punched Tordini in the face and it still went in.
Yeah, but yeah, he's done all right for the majority of his time in this tournament. It's just a shame he couldn't be there when it mattered, but I think that's pretty much sums up Brad Guzan's career.
That sums up the United States against Argentina. They were not winning that game. Even if the best 11 players in the United States all played the best game of their career, they're not going to beat Messi playing at 50%. I don't know. It's Messi's a god.
But yeah, I mean, Aston Villa's keeper can't hold up against the talisman of Barcelona at all, even if it is in the Copa America in a quarterfinal. Was it semi-final even?
Yeah, last night was a semifinal. Semifinal, and the United States lost the semifinal on Monday. So
moving into the third place playoff. But yeah, I can't believe you managed to get Carlos Sanchez. That's amazing.
I know, I was thrilled, especially I tried to talk to Guzan after the U.S. beat Costa Rica 4-0 a couple weeks ago, and he was walking down to the locker room, and I shouted, "Hey, Brad, you have a moment to talk about Villa?" And I didn't exactly hear what he said, but it kind of sounded like F off.
Really? So
I just left it, but I couldn't really hear what he said, so I don't want to say that he said that, but I think it'd be hilarious if he told me that.
Brad Guzan told our own Jack Grimsley he just wanted the word about Aston Villa just to fuck off.
And I just said, yeah.
Maybe he was chewing gum. Who knows? You know, he's got a lot of time for chewing gum.
Yeah, I don't know, but I asked Klinsmann. I said, hey Jurgen, do you have a minute? And he just looked at me and said, no. I just couldn't even stop laughing. It was hilarious, but
oh man.
Yeah, I couldn't get a picture with Sanchez. I tried to get one on my Snapchat, but the lady saw it and walked over right away, and I just showed her. I deleted it because I didn't want her to smash my recorder with me talking to Carlos Sanchez on it. So
that's horrible.
Yeah,
but yeah, Jack. What more content can we bring to the folks today? What have we got?
We kind of skipped around our schedule, moved up Copa and Euro, so that means it's time for Twitter questions.
Why not?
And you got to one already. Let's get to the first one we got earlier today. Of course, the food question from Tyler Fisher at tfisher21, also here in Chicago. Since I know you need spaghetti emoji questions, I think you meant food questions. If you got to spend time in the kitchen with one Villa player, who would it be? And a little bit before this, I was regretting so badly not asking Carlos Sanchez what his favorite English or British food is. I think that would have been hilarious.
I think I'd have liked to cook with Carlos Sanchez saying that.
I think Carlos Hill would make a better paella like that. I bet he could make some Valencian stuff.
Alan Hutton just eats deep fried Mars bars and...
No, I feel like he eats like raw like livers or something. He just, you're like hunting in the Highlands in Scotland and like that's Hannibal the only thing available. No, like the inside of a tauntaun, like pretty innocent, not like an evil killer, just a hard man, I don't know.
Yeah, I think I gotta go for Carlos Sanchez on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Rudy would cook some good stuff.
Yeah, and they would kindly donate to that to the homeless folks.
That too.
Which is amazing. So yeah, he's a cook enough to go around, certainly. I don't know if Brad.
Yeah, I don't know. That was a good. Drop the plates
or something. I'll drop the pans before the.
What does Grealish cook? Nando's.
He doesn't cook. His mom cooks for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carlos Hill, your choice.
Yeah.
Why not, man? Why not?
Yeah, I think so.
Why not?
Although, I don't know, maybe one of the French guys, maybe Vertu.
Didn't he get like homesick and really depressed something. For it? I don't think he'd be in the mood to cook for you.
Yeah, I don't think his wife could cook in the hotel.
You know, got a newborn as well. You know, they'll have to prepare the food in the bathtub or something.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
Disgusting.
Just gross.
Maybe not.
Who else? Scott.
I'm trying to.
You know, Gabby.
Oh my gosh.
It'd be a burger, but the bun is the burger.
It'd be like a takeaway that was sitting outside since yesterday. He's like, hey, I got this pizza over here in it. And then you're like, okay. And it's just a Domino's that's
It'd be half a pigeon that here he hit go. In his car earlier. Just, here you go, mate. Just completely gift-wrapped.
Or maybe it would just be something like totally amazing.
He's a devil in the kitchen, Gabby. Yeah, he must be because he's a fat bastard. So, you know, he must be getting that food in somewhere. Yeah, man.
Yeah, you know, or I don't know if Kozak Czech food is pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, like he can't really stand up for too long without.
Oh, that's true. I think we have to go with Carlos Hill.
I'll take Carlos Hill. Yeah. Why not? Or yeah, Ashley Westwood, good old roast dinner, Ashley Westwood.
Carver dinner.
Just gravy and chips and just like plain, just boiled potatoes and ham or something, or lunch and meats, corned beef.
I feel like this is the wrong episode for Robert to miss. He definitely,
definitely should have saved that episode.
His kitchen expertise. No, maybe he can write something on it for the site.
That'd be good. But yeah, man, I think we've pretty much covered who we'd love to eat. No, we'd love to eat. Oh, that's dark. Sorry about that. I was thinking too much about our Hannibal Lecter reference. Who would like to eat with and get cooked by? Oh, my God. This is just falling into cannibalism completely badly.
Yeah. Next up, Ellis, the dragon himself, the Wales fan, Ellis Sanford, asked you to speak some Welsh, James. Okay.
What did Ellis say to me earlier? A bit of background. I make full radio commercials in the Welsh language on a daily basis. So I've picked up some tips. And I can tell you that Ellis voting in the EU referendum and 6 hours ago, Ellis Sanford had to go all the way up to Llandindrod. Oh, fuck, I'm balls that up. Llandindrod to do it. We'd better stay in it after all that effort. Just saying. There's also a place called Tane Caste. Which makes biscuits, and people always tell me I pronounce it wrong, but I know it's right because I call up the company and that's how they say it, but I get told it's right all the time. So yeah, that's all the Welsh I'm going to speak today. Tane Caste. Oh, I can't say it now. I'm under pressure, Jack. Tane Caste and Llandrindod. Oh, God. I'm not speaking Welsh again, so I hope Ellis doesn't ask me that, or we'll have to block him on twitter.com.
Or we're just going to all go on a field trip to Iceland and, you know.
And not pronounce any of their language at all, because it's one language that could be possibly harder than Welsh to say.
How about that commentary, though? That was
amazing.
That was something.
I think he wet himself. But yeah, Welsh is very hard to say, so I'm surprised a man can get his feelings out in Icelandic so eloquently.
Yeah, you know, I don't really know how those letters made those sounds, but I'm just
fan. Like, I know the LL in Welsh is kind of like flan, but like you have to almost cough in the middle. It's like, how does this exist? Because the LL, you'd think it would just be really strong L or something. I don't know. But yeah.
Or like the Spanish, like why? Like how half the people I meet in the US say Aston Villa because they think it's that. So that's
Aston Villa.
So it's always a good way to start off on the right foot.
I think he's going to piss himself at me trying.
Yeah, you write for that Aston Villa blog.
At least it's not in Welsh.
Yeah.
Speaking of Welsh, Hal Robson-Kanu is an upgrade on Rudy Gisted. Asked by
I think of Robson-Kanu as a winger.
Yeah, I think of him
not a striker. He's a winger.
As just as average as one Rudy Gisted, but yeah. He does. I think he's been playing up front for Wales mostly. But he did grab a goal against Slovakia. And I mean, if he's on a free, I'd consider him as a compliment, not an upgrade to Rudy.
Why not? Why not take someone on a free?
Yeah, why not take him?
I know I was complaining about Kieran Richardson, but this is a different situation.
And the pros and cons.
He's about 5 years younger.
Yeah, yeah, I'd definitely go for that then, age-wise. But pros and cons of Hal Robson-Kanu, he's not past it. He's pretty fast. He's Welsh. Cons, there's not many cons. He's just a bit part player.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he can't really hurt you if he's not always on the pitch. You know, he's going to start some games, but he's not your first choice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Left wing, right wing, or center forward. But if someone's hurt in the wrong spot and he can fill in there, why not?
Yeah,
he's gonna run around, and sometimes he's gonna score. He had 3 goals and 7 assists in 28 championship appearances last year, so he's not unfamiliar with attacking.
Good guy, and I think I've already answered. Is the control alt delete of relegation actually a good thing for this team? Asked by Daniel Bettridge at Daniel Bettridge on Twitter. Yeah, man, I've moved completely on, and I think the worst thing to do is dwell. Teams dwell, and they get haunted by it. And I can never get over that. Dwelling on relegation is one of the worst things we can do.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was scary, and then maybe Lerner actually did it the right way. Wait till we went down, got a good buyer who's going to do everything he can to make Villa the best club in the world, apparently. But, you know,
yeah, man.
Even if he doesn't, he can still become a hero.
You get to rebuild instead of being on that tightrope of the Premier League.
And he gets rid of Eric Black, finally.
Basically
one final thought.
A thankless task that he performed not very well. Not very well at all. You know, he can't...
Parking the boss.
Yeah, really rocked the boat with Yoris Okoro.
It looks like he actually could end up staying. So
amazing, amazing turnaround. But I think we'd rather see a lot more people just go, just so we can free up space for some new faces that Villa desperately need.
Exactly, and it's been a positive start. We addressed it kind of at the beginning of the show with Burnham's former captain, Tommy Elphick, joining. So,
you know,
everything's looking good, like you're saying, James. And if you missed it, there's the fixture against Luton Town was announced in the Football League Cup for next season.
Yeah.
So I think that's really the last bit of Villa news that we have for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much time to plug some good stuff that we've had. Jack's been writing about, obviously, the Copa America across various sites, including Pace Soccer, I believe. And our Alex Carson had a very, very, very interesting article about his heritage in Croatia. How their fans acted the other day. I mean, we all saw it when they took flares on the pitch. And especially when I heard this bang, I wasn't really looking. I thought, oh, God, has the worst happened? You know, what we were all expecting to happen to these stadiums in France happened. But I was just chucking flares on the pitch and, you know, it was inappropriate.
At the officials, you know, if you're going to burn yourself with a flare in your section, that's your prerogative. I'm not going to stop you.
But, yeah, they've suffered a lot with the way their football association runs in their country. And the only way they could get anyone to see was causing a bang at Euro 2016.
And I'm surprised more people haven't talked about Romania, where a lot of clubs don't release players actually and don't pay them. So
yeah, a bit weird, something kind that, of protest yeah, slavery,
really terrible. But yeah,
and more things need to be done about a lot of things in football. And you know, we can say all the stuff we want to about those Croatia fans who chucked the flares on the pitch, and you know, it's awful that someone could have got hurt, but hey, no one's listening to these guys. You know, as soon as this tournament finishes, they just go back into that shell somewhere, you know, in the Balkans, and they just stay there and no one cares.
Yeah, and especially the better they do, it makes their organization looks like they have everything together. So you know, it almost gets swept under the rug too.
Yeah, best thing and worst thing is they could win this tournament, but then no one listens to them and they go back home and no one cares about this football league and no one cares what's happening to the country and they're just there and not being listened to. And you know, as a football fan, you want to be important to your FA, your football association, and not just this commodity. And fair play for them. I mean, I'm glad that no one got seriously injured in what happened and scenes did turn ugly, but... Hey, if you're not going to stick up for yourself, who is? Especially if you're from a country like Croatia where, you know, outside of football, and you know, in this Western Europe, no one cares.
Exactly. That's a good point. So, I don't know. The Euros and Copa have been very exciting. And yeah, like you're saying, I'm writing for Pace Soccer and as a Bundesliga fanatic as well. I had a piece on Messi on my own site. Ooh. That was really fun to watch Messi.
Yeah,
and yeah, you know, so it's been a fun Copa.
Yeah, it's been a good few weeks just to get away from Villa and watch football actually happen instead of being tortured by something you love.
Yeah, basically meaningless, and it's like you're saying, it was a chore.
Yeah, I mean, it's so good when football doesn't mean something. You can watch it because you get to see amazing things like Wales, you know, take it to Slovakia and England score in the last minute, and Northern Ireland, you know, hold back this barrage of shots by Germany just to qualify, then the Republic steal a win against Italy. You know, mad things happen when you don't care, and so it's so good to just watch this all unfold.
Yeah, so we're just hoping you're enjoying your summer of football as much as we are. So it was great to be back with James for this. It's kind of a crossover episode, of course, between the Hulkcast and On the Pod, My Lord. So if you're not caught up on James's show, make sure to do that. I don't think we're going to be back next week. Robert is almost finished with his current job, but we are going to be back. Yeah, we are going to be back, of course, in July, and we're getting some guests prepared for the show. So
that's good.
Got some good stuff in store for all of our loyal listeners. Okay. So
next week, me, Ellis, and Adam will be talking on the Pod, My Lord, about what's happened so far at the Euros, and we'll be looking to wrap up the round of 16 and the group stages as we look to take it to the quarterfinals and, you know, the finale of the tournament. So it's all
looking
good.
Yeah, and you'll have the result of the Copa final on Saturday the third place game on Saturday is the United States against Colombia, a rematch of actually the tournament's opening game, and then Sunday, Argentina against Chile, a rematch of last year's Copa America final that was in Santiago, Chile.
Of course, it sounds good.
So, yeah, if you're listening to us, you've known where to find us before, so continue to do so, and continue to interact with us on Twitter. We love getting all your questions. Thanks for those, and thanks for liking us on Facebook. So, for James Rushton, I'm Jack Grimsey, and we'll see you next time on the Hulkcast.